Welcome to SCOTUS Cast, Federal Vacancies Reform Act Edition. Thank you for tuning in. On November 7, 2016, the Supreme Court heard oral argument in National Labor Relations Board v. Southwest General Inc. Southwest General Inc. provides ambulance services to hospitals in Arizona. A union had negotiated longevity pay for Southwest General's emergency medical technicians, nurses, and firefighters. In December 2012, between the expiration of one collective bargaining agreement and the negotiation of a new one, Southwest General stopped paying the longevity pay. The union filed an unfair labor practices claim with the National Labor Relations Board, which issued a formal complaint. An administrative law judge determined that Southwest General had committed unfair labor practices, but Southwest General contended that the NLRB complaint was invalid because the acting general counsel of the NLRB at the time, Leif Solomon, had been serving in violation of the Federal Vacancies Reform Act. President Barack Obama had nominated Solomon, who had then been serving as acting general counsel after the general counsel had resigned, to serve as general counsel, but the Senate had not acted on the nomination. The president had ultimately withdrawn the nomination and replaced it with that of Richard Griffin, who was confirmed. In the intervening period, including when the NLRB complaint had issued against Southwest General, Solomon had continued to serve as acting general counsel. Southwest General argued that under the FVRA, Solomon became ineligible to hold the acting position once nominated by the president to the general counsel position. The U.S. Court of Appeals for the D.C. Circuit agreed and vacated the NLRB's enforcement order. The NLRB then obtained a writ of certiorari from the Supreme Court. The question now before the Supreme Court is whether the FVRA precondition in 5 U.S.C. 3345b1 on service in an acting capacity by a person nominated by the president to fill the office on a permanent basis, which requires that a person who is nominated to fill a vacant office subject to the FVRA may not perform the office's functions and duties in an acting capacity unless the person served as first assistant to the vacant office for at least 90 days in the year preceding the vacancy, applies only to first assistants who take office under subsection A1 of 5 U.S.C. 3345, whether it also limits acting service by officials like Solomon, who assume acting responsibilities under subsections A2 and A3. To discuss the case, we have Kristen Hickman, who is the Distinguished McKnight University Professor, Harlan Albert Rogers Professor of Law, and Associate Director, Corporate Institute, at the University of Minnesota Law School. As always, the Federalist Society takes no position on particular legal or public policy issues. All expressions of opinion are those of the speaker. And now, Professor Hickman.
National Labor Relations Board v. Southwest General Inc. is a case concerning the proper interpretation of the Federal Vacancies Reform Act of 1998 and who may serve in an acting capacity as an officer of the United States. Somewhat ironically, perhaps, Acting Solicitor General Ira Gershengorn argued the case on behalf of the government. For another bit of trivia that was actually noted at oral argument, the original impetus for the Vacancies Act was the Senate's disagreement with President Bill Clinton over his nomination of Bill Lan Lee to serve as Assistant Attorney General for Civil Rights back in the late 1990s. When the Senate refused to confirm Lee's nomination, President Clinton made Lee first assistant, then designated him as the acting Assistant Attorney General, and eventually recess appointed him to the position of Assistant Attorney General. Lee served the office in one capacity or another for 2.5 years, notwithstanding the lack of Senate confirmation. The present case is a statutory one, but like the circumstances surrounding Bill Lan Lee and other disagreements over appointments to government posts, this case carries a certain separation of powers twist to it. Turning then to the background of the present case, the National Labor Relations Act requires the General Counsel of the NLRB to be appointed by the President with the advice and consent of the Senate. We all know that the President has many important posts to fill and that Senate confirmations take time. When an office like General Counsel of the NLRB becomes vacant, the Vacancies Act allows the President to fill positions like the General Counsel of the NLRB temporarily, but also places limitations on which persons are eligible to serve in such a way. In this case, President Obama appointed Leif Solomon, who was then serving as the director of the NLRB's Office of Representation Appeals, to serve temporarily as the NLRB's acting general counsel. 6 months later, President Obama nominated Solomon to serve as the NLRB's general counsel on a more permanent basis. The Senate never confirmed Solomon, and President Obama eventually withdrew his nomination and nominated Richard Griffin instead, whose nomination the Senate subsequently confirmed. Regardless, while Leif Solomon was serving as acting general counsel, and while his nomination to serve permanently as general counsel was pending, the NLRB considered and concluded that Southwest General had committed an unfair labor practice under the statute. Southwest General claims that the NLRB's complaint against it was unauthorized because under the Vacancies Act, Solomon could not legally issue it as acting general counsel once he had been nominated to serve permanently as general counsel of the NLRB. The D.C. Circuit agreed with Southwest General and vacated the NLRB's order in an opinion authored by Judge Karen Henderson for a panel that included Judges Shree Srinivasan and Robert Wilkins. The D.C. Circuit's position was consistent with an interpretation of the same statute by the Ninth Circuit in Hooks v. Kitsap Tenant Support Services, Inc. But when the D.C. Circuit denied en banc review, three judges dissented from that denial. The statute at issue in this case, again, is the Vacancies Act, specifically 5 U.S.C. Section 3354. When a vacancy arises for an office like General Counsel of the NLRB, Section 3345A of the Vacancies Act provides three separate ways that the President can name someone to temporarily perform the functions and duties of the vacant office. First, Section 3354A1 of the statute suggests as a default that the first assistant to the vacant office shall perform the functions and duties of the office temporarily in an acting capacity. Second, Section 3354A2 of the statute alternatively allows the President to tap instead another principal officer appointed by the President with the advice and consent of the Senate. Third, Section 3354A3 of the statute alternatively allows the President to name another senior official of the same agency, specifically someone who has achieved a pay level of at least GS-15 to serve temporarily in an acting capacity. Next, Section 3345B in turn places a limitation on who can fill the vacancy. That provision says that notwithstanding subsection A1, a person may not serve as an acting officer for an office if the person did not serve in the position of first assistant in the past year or has served in the position of first assistant for less than 90 days, and if the President nominates the person to the Senate for appointment to the office on a more permanent basis. In a sense, this case reduces to a dispute about this notwithstanding subsection A1 clause at the start of Section 3345B when it says that the limitation of that provision applies notwithstanding subsection A1. In other words, does the limitation of Section 3345B on the President's discretion to choose a temporary replacement to fill a vacancy apply only to first assistants under Section 3345A1, or does the limitation of Section 3345B apply to any person described by Section 3345A1, A2, and A3? The answer to this question matters in this case because Leif Solomon was never a first assistant. As the government points out in its brief, the Office of Legal Counsel, the Government Accountability Office, and past practice support its interpretation of the statute, which would allow Leif Solomon to continue to serve as acting general counsel of the NLRB even after the president had nominated him to fill that position on a more permanent basis. The D.C. Circuit and the Ninth Circuit have sided with the challenger's contrary interpretation, which says that notwithstanding the fact that Leif Solomon was not a first assistant, but rather was someone who had achieved a pay level of at least GS-15, that nevertheless, once the president nominated him to serve more permanently as general counsel of the NLRB, that made his service as acting general counsel inappropriate under the statute. If you like statutory interpretation, this case is a classic. Both Southwest General and the government rely on a combination of textual canons, legislative history, and statutory purpose, as well as the court's constitutional law jurisprudence concerning presidential appointment powers. Textually, Southwest General's argument is built primarily around the canon against surplusage. They observe that Section 3345A1 assumes as the default position that first assistants will assume the role of acting officer, while Section 3345A2 and A3 offer the president two other alternatives. They then read the notwithstanding clause as meaning implicitly, notwithstanding the automatic default nature of Section 3345A1, a person may not serve as an acting officer if the conditions of Section 3345B's limitation exist, in this case, appointment to serve as general counsel of the NLRB on a more permanent basis. Finally, Southwest General outlines how restricting the limitation of Section 3345B to first assistants covered by 3345A1 would leave the language of Section 3345B inoperative and superfluous in many instances. By comparison, the government's argument focuses principally on the expressio unius canon. Because the notwithstanding clause specifically mentions Section 3345A1, but does not mention Section 3345A2 or A3, the government says that the 3345B limitation must only apply to first assistants serving in an acting capacity under 3345A1. Turning to legislative history and purpose, Southwest General gleans from the Vacancies Act's legislative history the understanding that Congress intended to prevent presidents from abusing the process of filling vacant offices with temporary replacements. The government draws the opposite conclusion, reading from the legislative history, congressional intent to give the presidents flexibility in filling vacant agency positions temporarily. Finally, Southwest General turns to the canon of constitutional avoidance, claiming that its interpretation of the Vacancies Act will avoid a constitutional question of whether the act violates the Constitution's norm of Senate advice and consent regarding who may serve as a principal officer. In response, the government turns to Justice Breyer's majority opinion in NLRB versus Noel Canning. Listeners to this podcast may recall that Noel Canning concerned the Constitution's recess appointments clause, not the proper interpretation of the Vacancies Act. Nevertheless, the NLRB invokes Justice Breyer's majority opinion in Noel Canning for the proposition that longstanding practice can inform the allocation of appointment power between the President and the Senate under the Constitution. The government's brief observes that not only do the Office of Legal Counsel and the Government Accountability Office support its interpretation of the Vacancies Act, in more than 100 instances involving all three presidents subject to the Act to date, someone serving in an acting capacity was also nominated to assume the same position permanently. In other words, if longstanding practice suggests constitutionality, then there is no constitutional issue to be avoided by interpreting the statute as Southwest General suggests. The government also infers congressional acquiescence from this longstanding practice in applying the Vacancies Act. At oral argument, the justices explored the gamut of the arguments raised in the briefing, mixed with the usual what-if hypotheticals and some colorful restaurant analogies, but no real surprises or bombshells. The justices seemed somewhat divided along ideological lines, with Justices Breyer, Ginsburg, Kagan, and Sotomayor arguably more sympathetic to the government's argument, and Chief Justice Roberts, along with Justices Kennedy and Alito, seeming arguably more skeptical. Justice Thomas was characteristically quiet. But some of the justices asked hard and pointed questions of both sides. In particular, in an exchange regarding the practical consequences of affirming the D.C. Circuit and ruling against the government, Justice Ginsburg, as well as Justice Kennedy, seemed unconvinced that, to use Justice Kennedy's words, a great parade of horribles would emerge from expanding the scope of Section 3345B as a limitation on whom the president can tap to serve as an officer in an acting capacity. Justice Ginsburg suggested that, for most past actions by inappropriately serving acting officers, challenges by now would be waived. Interestingly, although notwithstanding the government's identification of more than 100 past instances of acting appointments that would be inconsistent with Southwest General's interpretation of the Vacancies Act, Acting Solicitor General Gershengorn, was not able to identify specific examples of government actions that might be invalidated, or perhaps he just inclined to do so, sticking instead to broad categories like rulemakings by the heads of agencies and decisions on litigation that might be subject to challenge. Because the D.C. Circuit decided this case in favor of Southwest General, if the court divides 4-4 with our current court of 8 justices, then the D.C. Circuit's interpretation of the statute will prevail, at least for now.
Thank you for listening to this episode of SCOTUS Cast. For more episodes of SCOTUS Cast, as well as audio and video of past Federalist Society events, please visit our website at www.federalistsociety.org/multimedia.